At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It seems quiet economically, sure, but still waters run deep, you know. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 26th of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. If you were with us on Friday, you heard me say it kind of felt like we had entered the summertime economic news doldrums. A couple of pops of activity, but otherwise kind of quiet. We begin this week the same way, but it is going to heat up in just a couple of days. We'll get consumer confidence figures, revised gross domestic product, that's economic growth, also personal consumption expenditures, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation. Tomorrow, we're going to get something called durable goods orders for the month of May, tools and machinery, robotic arms, other big manufactured stuff. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains what that can tell us.
Manufacturers' workloads depend a lot on the state of the economy. And right now, the global economy is slowing down, says Chad Moutre, chief economist at the National Association of Manufacturers.
You know, as a result of some of that global weakness, we're seeing demand for manufactured goods in the U.S. pretty challenged.
Moutre says in many cases, manufacturers themselves have been buying less new equipment and machinery, in some cases because of that slower demand. And ever since the regional bank failures that happened this year, Moutre says manufacturers are having a harder time financing big purchases.
It's likely more of an issue for those small and medium-sized manufacturers that are much more heavily dependent on those regional banks for their credit.
A lot of this depends on what type of durable goods we're talking about. Orders of computers, for example, have been rising lately. Kathy Bosjancic, chief economist at Nationwide, says given how hard it's been to find workers,
there's even more demands to be productive, and technology is at the core of it.
Then there are the durable goods used in parts of the economy where consumer spending is strong, like food service. Greg Warwick is CEO of TMB Baking, which sells stuff like spiral mixers and rotating rack ovens to artisan bakeries and wholesalers.
We're seeing strength within both of those to support the high demand for baked goods.
Warwick says it helps that consumers have been spending more on services, like going out to eat. So many of his clients are doing well. But even if the economy slows down,
it doesn't hurt that we're supporting a segment of the industry where consumers need to purchase those core items.
It's because baked goods are a staple. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Three words, people. Three little words. Commercial real estate. Building owners and banks and leasing agents and just about everybody involved in CRE, as it's known, offices in this case, to be specific, is asking themselves some version of the same question these days. How bad do we think it's going to get? Possibly pretty bad. The research group Capital Economics says that by 2025, office real estate values nationally will have dropped 35% from pre-pandemic levels and won't touch where they were in the before times again until 2040. That means bargains are coming for some tenants, And pain is coming for plenty of others who aren't tenants. Here's Marketplace's Matt Levin.
Stephen McDonald's law firm rents about 4,700 square feet in the Flood Building, a historic office high-rise in San Francisco. He comes in every day, but his 14-person staff is hybrid. The lease expires in about a month, and his landlord really wants him to stay.
Everything is dropped. First time I've been there, I think 35 years. First time the rent has ever come down.
McDonald says it's hard to pass on the roughly 20% price cut being dangled in front of him, but
what it actually leads in my brain to is looking at other opportunities, and I'm waiting for it to soften further, and then we might say, oh my goodness, we could be in that building.
San Francisco has the most ghosted office buildings. Tech jobs that can be done basically anywhere and a severe homelessness problem has sent the overall vacancy rate to nearly 30%, an all-time high. But the story isn't that much better in other cities, especially for older office space, says economist Kieran Raichura with Capital Economics.
Unless you've got like one of the newest, shiniest buildings that has been built in the last 10 to 20 years, then pretty much everything else, even if it's good quality, it's going to suffer quite badly.
That's suffering for the owners of those not-so-shiny buildings, but also for regional banks, a common source of office building mortgages. For now, loan delinquency rates are just slightly above historic norms. Landlords are getting creative, for example, adding a second floor of retail in mixed-use buildings. But Matt Anderson at the commercial loan data company TREP says he expects late payments to eventually hit highs not seen since the Great Recession.
It's like you're in a hot air balloon and you've got a gradual leak. I mean, hopefully for the market, that's how it turns out as opposed to a crash.
Which is what Jay Powell worries about when he stares outside his office window. Or does he work from home too? I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
I don't know. That's a good question. I bet he goes into the office. Wall Street today, a little down until you get to tech, and then it was down a lot. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. You've heard of those U.S. News and World Report rankings, right? Mostly in the context of colleges. Now, think hospitals. There are U.S. News hospital rankings, too, taken seriously by those medical centers on the theory that patients, by which, of course, I mean customers, pay attention to them when choosing where to get care. Well, this morning, the University of Pennsylvania Health System, that is home to six hospitals, by the way, said it's not going to actively participate in U.S. News rankings anymore. They were UPenn, by the way, often ranked in the top 20 for what it's worth. But what is it worth? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes looked at those rankings and the business of American healthcare.
The University of Pennsylvania Health System CEO, Kevin Mahoney, knew his organization was paying too much attention to rankings when it decided to maintain a facility in an underserved Philadelphia neighborhood.
And as we were sitting around the table with my senior leadership team, you know, someone raised the question, what impact will this have on our U.S. News and World rankings? And I don't want that to be a factor in us making decisions.
Mahoney says his healthcare system was proud of its consistently high rankings, but he says overall, patients and healthcare providers need more transparency about what goes into them.
And as an industry, you know, we haven't done as good a job as we could have and will to better explain the differences. We need to do better.
In a statement, U.S. News CEO Eric Gertler said its hospital rankings provide an important service to families making decisions about medical care, and they should be just one factor in that process. It's a financial factor for some patients, says UT Austin economics professor Robert Town, who researches competition in healthcare. He says if hospitals are higher ranked, it becomes more important for insurers to include those hospitals in their networks.
And so that gives them a bit more negotiating leverage with insurers.
But many patients don't comparison shop for hospitals.
As a guess, I'd say that's maybe 5% of the time, 10% of the time.
Vikas Sani is a cardiologist who leads the Lown Institute, a think tank that rates hospitals on how socially responsible they are. Lown sells some of that data to U.S. News. Sani says there should be more information available to help the public make healthcare decisions. And, rankings aside, it's worth taking the time to do your own research. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Demographers will tell you, should you ask, that among the most significant mass migrations of the past, say, 40 years, has been the hundreds of millions of Chinese who've moved from the countryside to the massive urban centers that sprang up as China became a significant power in the global economy. In fact, that migration has been why China has had such economic success. But now, with the economy over there struggling after 3 years of zero COVID lockdowns, Beijing is telling people to return to the land. Some people actually started going back years ago. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack has our story from Jiangxi Province in central China.
On an orange farm in Xinfeng County, over 1,000 trees dot the hills next to a pond. Little green fruits hang off the branches. Examining them is fruit supplier Qing An. In 5 months, he says, they'll ripen into golden and juicy navel oranges, a local specialty. This work is very different from his previous job as an IT product manager in the city of Shenzhen.
The natural scenery in the countryside is soothing. I'm more relaxed here. Whereas living in the megacities, the pace of life is fast.
He left Shenzhen in 2019 after a big project he was working on fell apart.
I got sick with depression. I took a year off before returning to my hometown.
Around the same time, his college friend, Hu Hang, was nearby visiting family, and he was also rethinking his big city dream. Hu Hang was earning good money as a coder in Shenzhen, but says he had zero social life.
Suddenly, Qing An gave me a call and said, how about we return to our hometowns and sell our high-quality fruit? I said yes without a second thought.
Together, they source local navel oranges and peaches and sell them to wealthy families in big cities. They got a huge sales boost during the Shanghai lockdown and subsequent COVID wave last year. They're not earning a lot yet, but they say they have no regrets about coming back. Again, ex-coder Hu Hang.
I want to encourage more entrepreneurial young people to go back to their hometowns. There's a lot of potential in agriculture.
He's doing exactly what China's government wants when unemployment is high in the cities, like now. Officials call on people to return and revive the countryside. Still, when my team showed up at the orange farm, we had surprise visitors.
It's 91 degrees. And we're right underneath the sun. Behind us in tow are 1, 2, 3 people from the propaganda department, and they heard we were in town, and they showed up just to assist us if we need anything. They watch
carefully as orange expert Guo Huashan tells me that growing nice oranges is not a hard skill to pick up. But reviving the countryside is not as simple. Take that peach farm. A lot of farmers fertilizing the land are mostly older people. Many homes are abandoned. There's not even an elementary school anymore, says peach farmer Luo Changgen.
Coming from a megacity, of course you think our village is idyllic. But ever since our village was designated a national nature reserve, we can't develop anything else here. They only let us grow these peach trees. So there's not much else we can do to earn money here.
Over in bustling Shenzhen, real estate agent Eric He has decided the government's back-to-the-land approach is not for him. He's renting a small apartment after arriving in Shenzhen 4 months ago. He did try living in his hometown in Hubei province for a few years. But his employer there, property giant Evergrande, got into huge debt and cut his salary.
I have thought about raising chickens and pigs in the countryside, but let's be real. It's very hard for young people to do such hard work. I mean, it's such a smelly job.
Now he and his wife are expecting a baby. She's still back home, and he's alone in the city.
I'll work in Shenzhen for a few years. Since I'm still relatively young, I'll try to earn as much money as I can.
Shenzhen is a great city, he says. But if you're like him and millions of others from the countryside, it's really hard to find your place in the megacity. In Shenzhen, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
We sent a video crew along with Jennifer as she reported this story. Pictures to go with your audio. It's all at our homepage, marketplace.org. Coming up.
I did call one time to see what was taking so long.
When the unemployment office just ghosts you. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials basically flat today, less than a 10%, closed at 33,714. The NASDAQ down 156 points, 1.1%, 13,335. The S&P 500 subtracted 19 points, about 0.4%, 43.28. Justin was just doing data on durable goods for us, so let us look at the direction of a few durable goods makers on Wall Street today, shall we? 45 minutes north of South Bend, Indiana, you'll find the global headquarters of Whirlpool in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Shares up 1.5%. The corporate office of Goodyear Tire and Rubber is in Akron, Ohio's East End. Shares ascended 2.1%. You might not think of Yeti as a durable goods company, but those insulated coolers and mugs are supposed to last a good long time. Yeti is headquartered north of the West Oak Hill neighborhood on Southwest Parkway in Austin, Texas. Shares gained 4.5%. Bond prices were up. Yield on the 10-year, 3.71%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Gig work, if you set aside the pros and the cons of it, offered by companies that use gig workers and on the other side by the workers and organizations looking out for workers' rights, gig work is here to stay in the private sector. Xavier D'Souza Briggs is a senior fellow at Brookings Metro, where he wrote not too long ago about gig work in the public sector. Thanks for coming on.
Good to be with you.
You write in this piece I saw at Brookings Metro that you believe what we need in this country, among the many things we need in this country in the labor market, is a public option for gig workers. What does that mean?
Well, Kai, many workers are effectively sidelined in our economy. As strong as the job market is, many either need work that's flexible because they cannot work a regular schedule, or they want to supplement their salary job to get some extra income. And what we've outlined in the research is an emerging development coming really from local governments offering gig workers a way to find work on good terms, a way to show the full range of skills they have, so to progress over time, to have an employer of record so they can get benefits and basic protections afforded by law and other terrific things.
You point to a pilot program in Long Beach, just down the road from me where I am in Los Angeles. So let's say I'm a semi-skilled worker. I've got time on my hands. I need more income. And I'm in the neighborhood of Long Beach. How might this work?
You would go online and go into the app and go through a short intake process. You'd do an intake not unlike the kind you would do if you clicked on to Uber, where it says, do you want to be a driver? And what the city of Long Beach is doing is buying some of the services, buying some of the flexible work that it needs. Governments across America are some of the biggest buyers of flexible work, seasonal workers for parks and rec, event staffers, folks to help out during disasters or other emergencies. But the idea is that the platform should be as accessible and easy to use as what corporations are offering.
While local governments are not businesses, as Uber and all the rest of them are, they certainly are not bottomless pits of money, and they have certain financial imperatives they have to meet, right? They have budgets. They can't go crazy. They can't pay, $40 an hour or whatever it is. And I guess the question is, how do you protect workers who, as everybody knows, are at a disadvantage when working for Uber? How do you protect those workers when they're working for the city of Long Beach, for instance?
Well, what local governments are doing as this approach expands is to ensure that workers are earning a decent wage. In the Long Beach case, workers are earning between about $15 and $22 an hour. And cities, they would normally be procuring seasonal work or other flexible work, temp agencies or other sources, often each agency sort of doing its own thing. But what the worker sees is an employer of record. It's actually a nonprofit that acts as an intermediary, kind of like a temp agency would, but on better terms.
I wonder what this says then about what else this says, right? Because we've talked for years now about how work is changing. The pandemic has accelerated a lot of that. We've had the gig economy now. And this is another incremental change in the nature of work, specifically now in the public sector.
That's right. We need to guard against, the inappropriate conversion of regular salaried work. It's a challenge in our economy, and we don't want government going down the road of becoming a bad employer. But the fact of the matter is that the public sector and also the nonprofit sector and business sector as well all rely on flexible work to varying degrees, and we do in our everyday lives. So let's make sure that gig work or so-called non-standard work is good work too, because it ought to be.
Gig workers and the public option, a paper by Xavier D'Souza Briggs. He's a senior fellow at Brookings. Interesting piece. Thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
While one predicts the economic future at one's peril, it's not too risky a proposition to say that unemployment is probably going to go up as the Fed keeps raising interest rates to keep bringing down inflation. We should be clear, by the way, that unemployment where it is right now, 3.7%, even after 10 consecutive interest rate increases, is amazingly low. But the Fed is also predicting that the jobless rate is going to hit 4.5% by the end of next year. And weekly unemployment claims have been going up, too. So if you think back early in the pandemic, when unemployment claims shot through the roof and state unemployment systems crumbled, you know where we're going, right? Nobody could get through on the phone. Computer systems crashed. Benefits went unpaid. It was not great. Since then, states and the feds have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade things. So Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman took a look at how that's going in New Jersey.
Like many other states, New Jersey's unemployment system is still playing catch-up from the tsunami of jobless claims during the pandemic. Its phone and computer systems are still stressed. And Neil Fisher has experienced that firsthand. He's an engineer with two kids who lives in South Jersey. And this time last year, his job running computers for a startup ended. So he applied for unemployment and waited.
I did call one time to see what was taking so long. I ended up not even being able to get in contact with anybody.
He did at least find out why.
They sent me an email saying that there's a lot of people waiting to get calls and the call center is backed up.
Fisher's claim was eventually approved, and before long he had a new job running computers for a bank. New Jersey, meanwhile, is continuing to modernize its UI system. But it isn't easy, says Marcy Chin at U.S. Digital Response, a nonprofit that's helping states. For one thing, many of them use old mainframe computers.
Systems have not been upgraded for literally decades. So a lot of them are very brittle, hard to update, very hard to respond quickly, especially during a crisis.
The feds have invested significant amounts, says Michelle Evermore, who coordinated those efforts in the Biden Labor Department.
So far, $500 million has gone out the door for fraud grants, equity grants, and for these groups of experts that figure out where the real bottlenecks for each state are.
Still, most states are not prepared for a significant spike in unemployment, says Steve Wandner at the National Academy of Social Insurance.
We're no better ready to deal with recession than we were with the Great Recession.
Wandner says even as states update their IT, some, including Iowa, Kentucky, and Texas, are erecting additional barriers.
Restrictive legislation that makes it more difficult to apply for and receive benefits, lower benefits for a shorter period of time.
Meanwhile, New Jersey is among states trying to make it easier for laid-off workers to apply.
In person, at local workforce offices, by telephone, or by computer.
New Jersey's also trying to simplify the bureaucratic process and make it easier to track.
Making the application easier to understand, changing terminology.
Jessica Rivera is an unemployment supervisor in New Jersey, and she's been working with U.S. Digital Response on new online tools to help Latino workers who are less likely to get benefits after applying. In focus groups, her team tries to figure out which Spanish words convey, for instance, that a worker is eligible for unemployment benefits because they were laid off for lack of work.
They say more like I was fired. They'll say me corrieron, me botaron, se terminó el trabajo. And because of not using the right term, that can delay your benefits.
New Jersey's also redesigning its forms and online apps. Earlier this year, former unemployment recipient Neil Fisher was part of a focus group that got to test drive a new jobless application for mobile phones.
The whole process was a lot quicker. The interface was easier to use.
At this point, states can't expect much more help from Congress. In the recent debt ceiling deal, lawmakers canceled $1 billion in funding they'd already approved for new UI technology and fraud prevention. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which commodities markets looked at whatever it was that was going on in Russia over the weekend, attempted coup, a mutiny, whatever, and they basically shrugged. Oil today, both the global and U.S. benchmarks, up a mere 0.5% or so. Wheat actually fell off 1.4%. All right, here's your moment of economic context on the way out. A scoopy little tidbit from Bloomberg. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's going to go to China early in July for her first face-to-face meeting with her newly installed counterpart. I'm going to call Treasury, see if there's a seat on the plane, right? Why not? Our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.